How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Look at the screen. William Blix, the great red dragon, and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smarter than you.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You on the set?
Smell yourself. Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mindhunter. Yes, this is the podcast. We're examining, unpacking, profiling, taking the crime scene photos throughout Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, Mindhunter. Yes, I'm fully aware that I should have probably just called this show Mindhunter and added an extra N, but not quite on brand with everything we do. Had to be Mindhunter. And today, this is a good scene. We're at scene 18, as I've mapped it out, in 24 scenes of Mindhunter. You've heard a couple of episodes that are doubling up or examining the same moments. But this one was a particularly sought-after moment, and I've taken someone, I plucked a talent straight out of the film processing room. She may be tired. She may be going insane, but she's, you know, it's tiring in there. She's been processing film day and night in preparation for this episode. It's the legendary Priscilla Page. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hello. I'm okay. How's it going?
you know, people are getting by. I found a collateral hat, and as you can see.
I forgot to say, I love the hat.
I found it. My friend said that I look like I was going to offer a small town to kill a fish for them. and I said, that's the biggest compliment I've ever got in my life. I was so happy. But yeah, so I've got a collateral hat, and that's a win. That's a finding.
Didn't you get a crew shirt from Michael Mann recently? Did I hallucinate this?
No, you're correct about that.
Okay.
Not a collateral.
Not collateral, but something else. Okay, so this wasn't like a fever dream.
No, it was a heat. It was maybe one better, or the best, actually, in my mind. It was a Heat crew t-shirt.
Oh, okay, that's right. Oh, my God.
I will show you what it looks like front and back, but I've not shown anyone else what it looks like front and back yet.
What an honor. Okay.
I will not show people, Priscilla, because, you know, when people see it, then they'll try and rip it off. They'll try and rip it off, like, and... I can reveal today that it does have a front and back, a very, very significant thing there. But yes, I also hallucinated that my favorite filmmaker of all time and my hero sent me a care package. I think every day that it was a hallucination, but then I see things. See nice little card.
Oh my God, you got a card? I am so envious.
Yeah, it's the greatest thing that one of the coolest things that's ever happened. So I really can't humble brag. I want everyone to know listening that I actually still haven't processed it. I've completely dissociated, because if I actually acknowledged it, I'd just fall into a puddle. So I just, all I can do is just be really incredibly humbled and grateful. And everyone who's listening, if you've been on the One Heat Minute journey with us for a long time, you know that our obsessions run long and run deep. So it's been a pretty special, it was a pretty special thing to get. So yeah,
that's, I think it's well deserved.
Yeah, I feel like what is that thing where people say, like, don't call it a, like, I'm not an overnight success. I didn't just, like, you know what I mean? It's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I've been
You've been in
Will,
the trenches,
I've been
the
like
Michael
Will,
Mann trenches.
I feel like Will Graham. I'm like, just like,
See you in new sport.
I broke myself, like, for this guy. It's just me and him. Watched everything. Dictaphones, crime scenes, you name it. But no, very, very cool. But I found this collateral hat. It was actually a friend of mine. Not to take this on a random one, but a dear friend of mine passed away about 6 years ago. And I just went and helped his lovely wife pack up his collection of films because he owned a video store. His name was Dave. He was my dude. He was like, his favorite film was The Big Lebowski. He watched it 30 times in 30 days before he passed. He was an absolute gem and a sweetheart. And his lovely wife was downsizing, and she's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with his library of collectibles and memorabilia. And I said, under no circumstance are you allowed to throw it out. So I'm now the custodian of his collection.
Wow.
As I look around my office, which is crazy. And one thing he had was this collateral hat. I don't know where he got it from, but I saw it and I was like, that's...
I've never seen that before.
I've never seen it before either. And I was like, that's mine. I'm taking that and I'm going to wear it all the time. I'm going to think of Dave.
I'm so sorry, but it's a beautiful tribute to Dave, though.
Yeah, it's been 6 years and I talk to him all the time. I have a Big Lebowski bowling ball collection. His favorite film is Big Lebowski. And I have a bowling ball in my office that I feel like, you know, if you've ever seen like Friday Night Lights where the boys like kiss their fingers and then like touch the roof when they're walking out to play a game, that's what I do when I leave and enter and exit my office. Is my good luck is like I kiss my hand that I touch the bowling ball and I'm like, that's the one. That's, you know, that's good. He's here. He's here in my office. Whatever your beliefs are, he's here on the shelves now. In a big way. And he's on
That's
this
lovely.
rad collateral hat, which is now another prized treasure of the collection. So very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I like how simple and, you know, it's like really nice graphic.
Yeah. It's got something about it. And it does look like I am going to tell people that I will kill a fish for him. It does have that vibe as well, which I really enjoy. So folks, if you've never listened to the show before and you've seen Priscilla's name and you've thought, I'm going to listen to this because I love her, welcome. Thank you so much. This is, if you may have heard of like One Heat Minute, where we would examine Michael Mann's Heat a minute at a time, or All the Presidents, where we did the same thing with Alan J. Pakula's All the Presidents, Man. This is not necessarily a breakdown of that magnitude. It's more like our show Increment Vice, where we took apart Paul Thomas Anderson's series Inherent Vice a scene at a time, and I've mapped out 24 scenes extremely roughly because how the hell do you like break apart the end scene? That's just going to be a behemoth in and of itself. But we're at scene 18. We're in 1 hour 11 minutes and 53 seconds into the theatrical cut, and the only reason for you manheads out there or aficionados of great director's cuts, the only reason I haven't made my amazing guests like Priscilla go to the director's cut is because it's just harder to get your hands on. So I wanted to sort of stick with theatrical cut because it's the most readily available. But where we are, to orient ourselves, you would have heard the great Die Hard on a Blank boys just say, it's you and me now, sport. I'm gonna find you, god damn it. Heard those boys wax lyrical. You've heard us touch the windows in the rain. And now I've arrived truly at like a biggie introduction to Francis the Man rather than Red Dragon the Monster, with his kidnapping of Freddy and, you know, owing him awe, which you guys are hearing in the show. So we're now here with Francis at work. He's petting a sedated tiger, having a Reba pet a sedated tiger. It's all this amazing scene, which Priscilla and I are going to dig into. But before we do, Priscilla, talk to me about Manhunter. And I think you said something really nice to me offline, which I want to share, which is just like, this this kind of homework is good homework to talk about a scene like this scene in Manhunter. So tell me about your love of Manhunter, which I know you know so intimately.
I don't know. I feel like Silence of the Lambs is like the big Harris novel and adaptation, but I must confess that Red Dragon, the novel, is my favorite Thomas Harris novel.
Ditto.
And me and Will Graham, I think are, maybe this is a worrying thing to say, but I feel like he's one of the fictional characters who I relate to the most. Which maybe I shouldn't be saying this publicly, on record,
No,
but
I feel like I know you're writing, and when Priscilla like gets a topic, she literally, she's like, she's with a dictaphone in a room by herself late at night,
yeah,
just
I'm working the
pacing.
evidence,
She's
making
working there,
moves.
making moves, just pacing, just pacing. We can totally see you with a dictaphone pacing. Something about the speed soundtrack into it. It has to just saying stuff. That's so fun.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't know. I really relate to that character, and I think like even though Manhunter, I guess there is another Red Dragon adaptation, which maybe we should not speak of, but
Oh no, we can speak of it. I've just
it's
said
so
a few.
literal. Like it
I
really just, takes from the book, and it actually feels like a lesser adaptation for it. That it's such a direct, do you know what I
yeah.
mean? Like it's such a literal, like everything's in there, like there's no deviation, and it almost sort of like it lacks the poetry of Manhunter, I think.
Yeah, it's a really strange it's a really strange balance to strike in an adaptation of doing something to both honor and to enhance your experience of a text. Because Red Dragon itself, as a pulp crime novel, investigative thriller, there may be like none better. It's so propulsive, it moves, it's unputdownable, it's short, punchy, it's memorable, it's rereadable. And
Yeah.
so then you get something like Red Dragon, and I think I have to quote myself because a member of our Discord took a quote and made a fake t-shirt where I said it's got this movie's got like 8 Oscar winners in it and it's still a bag of shit. And I have to say Red Dragon is, that's exactly what it is. There's like 8 or 9 of the best human being filmmaking practitioners ever, all in the same movie, and it's ghastly. It has my favorite cinematographer, has one of the greatest screenwriters of all time, who also won an Academy Award for Silence of the Lambs only a few years earlier. It's got 2-time Academy Award winner Anthony Hopkins. One of his Academy Awards is for Hannibal Lecter, Ed Norton, Harvey Keitel, and it sucks. It's bad. It's the worst. And so yeah, I think that's about it. What I think everyone on the show knows my opinion very clearly. It's just like it's just when you look at someone take, it's the most direct thing you can ever do. It's like look at an adaptation over a couple of years and look at two different filmmakers approaching it. I think it was always super fun to do this when you had Manhunter and you had Silence of the Lambs and you had even Hannibal. You can see three filmmakers tackling a character very, very, very differently. And that's a really interesting one because Demme's a fascinating guy. Ridley, King Ridley, is still just the best. So he's always fun to look at. Like, I want to make a Universal Monster movie that's kind of abjectly grotesque. And then you look at Michael Mann, who has his own flavor in it. I just think that Red Dragon doesn't even, it's not even a flavor. It's not
Yeah,
even a, there's
there's
nothing
no
there.
nothing added to it
Yes.
from the filmmaker, which it's Brett Ratner, right?
Yeah.
I almost feel like I shouldn't be speaking his name. It's like forbidden or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a flavorless kind of, I don't hate it. I don't even remember the last time I watched it. So I just remember like I tried to do something insane, which was to reread the novel, but I didn't have enough time. But I like read the beginning and the end and different parts that I had highlighted. And he really takes like, there's so much in Manhunter that's that feels different in a good way, but Red Dragon is just really lifted from Red Dragon. There's like not that much. He isn't really riffing at all.
And he just doesn't, he feels styleless. He just feels completely absent of any kind of style. And I think that that's what's cool about the other adaptions, whether you like them or not, is that they have style. Like Silence looks, no movie looked like Silence of the Lambs before Silence of the Lambs. And I would argue very much that no movie has or since, unless it was directed by Michael Mann, looks quite like Manhunter. You see people, and I know you're such a huge fan of like Drive, you see like Winding Refn and stuff, guys like that, of like
Ripping,
Manhunter
ripping
is
it
like,
off.
they're like, yeah, that's the shit, you know? So it's definitely had a massive influence. All right, well, that's great. This particular scene, I think I want to dive into the conversation with you because it is an absolutely monumental one here. So let's not tease anyone listening any further. Let's hear Priscilla and I commentate, unpack, pause, take it back, because we know that she's been pacing. She's got the dictaphone ready. She's got the notes, the transcriptions. We got to get to this. Let's go.
The sequence starts with Eileen, right? Like, it's not just the tiger scene we're talking
No,
about,
no,
'cause,
no, no. It's not just the tiger. It's the beautiful lead up to
the
all of
lead up,
this.
yeah, which
Yes.
this is actually why I loved. Because I watched it in June, which is when we started talking about it. And then I did it again this time, and I watched that sequence a few times on its own. And I never really thought that much about Eileen and like what he does down in the processing room, but
Yes.
like this time that scene felt almost, or the sequence felt as rich to me as the tiger scene, because it really sets it up perfectly where you're seeing I don't know. I kind of feel like, as much as I love Will Graham in this movie, I feel like Francis is almost the heart of it. He's this like tragic figure to me. And you really see him at work dealing with his insecurity over his cleft lip scar. And you can see how much he wants to be direct with Eileen. It looks like he's about to say something important to her, and he freezes. So he goes down into that processing room to recover, basically. And it's interesting, like Michael Mann choreographs that so perfectly, where he's looking like this lost little boy, and he's small in the room. And then it's almost like an addict taking a hit, where he looks at the photo of Mrs. Sherman and he's like, okay, I feel better now. And he comes to the front of the frame, he like fills it, and then
Oh,
he
well,
puts on his shades.
let's watch it together and listen. There it is at this facility. Like a newspaper has just been eviscerated by the wind. And we're looking at this place, and it looks kind of like it's like sunrise or dusk, but it's very lonely. There is no one going around this roundabout here at this very brutal structure. And yeah, it's very brutal. And then, but then we go into the hearth, the warmth of Francis. Just that breeze, the crescendo of the music into just breeze and paper
Nothing.
touching the ground. It's a really fantastic. There's some of these transitions between these two, the scenes are were easy to pick, and it was such a great contrast for me when I was like, oh, that has a
That's the
definitive
cutoff.
end, and it has this cut off into this new space. And then here he is with his beautiful badass shades, his absolute great drip, Francis, this white
Yeah, his
hair.
shirts are so, he wears these like, they're almost like blouses, but they have these beautiful graphic design.
Keep an eye out for Priscilla's eventual Francis Dahlhide collection. She'll probably collaborate with our great friend Kate Gabriel, you know, one day there'll just be like a subsection of Kate's talk. It's just the Frances Dolehide Priscilla
Yeah,
Page Presents
I do have
collection.
a problem sometimes where I like pull from movies accidentally or inadvertently, like sometimes intentionally, and I hope I don't start dressing like Frances though.
I'm like, it's kind of half-half. It's like Halloween, unbelievable ideas from Francis. Day to day,
Not
maybe
so
not.
much.
Maybe not. Here he is, but it's this warm innards, still so cold outside. The color's cold. Everything's cold, and he's kind of warm, and he's wearing sunglasses inside. So it's not necessarily the glare. It's part of the disguise, as you were talking about. Oh,
Look at
and he,
that
his claw-like hand, she
Just
just
so
with her
limp.
big nails and just gets him on the back. It's like, oh, you can tell he sort of does do that little, oh, like he jolts and turns around. So great.
Mr. Dellerhide.
Hi.
Oh, now talk about drip. Like, it's like Tank Girl. Like, she looks like
Yeah.
she's got like Tank Girl vibes here, like a really trendy shirt, these like incredible goggles, which absolutely must have a function in this film processing place, but it's
They
so
just look
cool.
sick.
They look awesome. She looks amazing. And
And he
she's
knows it, which is why he's wigging.
he's totally wigging out, and she's giving him a look that makes him feel like a snack, and that she's going to consume. Like, she looks Mr. Dollarhide, so good. The best. She's amazing.
Bill told me to tell you there was a variation in the gamma of number 3. But he caught it in time. See, for a second, the facade sort of drops. Like he's so instinctually used to covering his face, but it's like for a moment, you think maybe he's gonna say something cool and like, direct to her, and then he kind of clams up.
Yes. And I just love, like you said, it's a character tic, but it's so well deployed. I want to tell folks there's lessons you can learn from movies, and one of them is this. If you're ever in a meeting and you want to shut up, there's nothing smarter than you can do than you deploy the Frances Dolehide technique. Literally cover your lip with your finger. Put your finger at, interesting. That's good. Okay. If you feel like you can't stop yourself from instinctively responding, it is actually a very good technique. Get your index finger and just like put it on your lip like Francis. It's 1 hour, 12 minutes, 20 seconds. Just covering his lip. Okay. Yep. Eileen, I found it. And also, I love the contrast that she's towering over him first. Then when he stands, he's just like a head, a shoulder, a torso
He's
taller
a
than
big
her. And
boy.
she just goes, whoa, and looks up. It's like, whoa, you are really tall. Priscilla, do you want to know the last time you said you're a big boy? It was to me in person in
Oh, I
Los
hope you
Angeles.
weren't offended by that.
No,
I was
no.
surprised by how tall you were.
No, but you said that. You're like, wow, you're a big boy. Like, I was like, it's just so funny that that's me and Francis now
I know, in
together.
retrospect, I was like, I hope that wasn't, it just was
No.
like a shock because I'm a shrimp, but you don't really know. I mean, we're always like sitting down talking over Zoom, so you never know,
It
you
was so
know.
funny. It's like Sean Burns, when he met me in person, called me a liar. He's like, you fucking liar. How are you this tall? You lying piece of shit. I go, excuse me. Great Bostonian film critic, one of our dear friends, love him to pieces. And he's like, you've just been lying to us. Your camera, you always look like you're short on camera. You could just be a short
Huh.
guy, but now you're really tall. I'm like, I wasn't lying, man. I didn't have a height metric on my camera. I'm sorry. That's so funny. But yes, he is a big boy. I'm not as big as Tom Noonan. He is a giant. He's a
He
giant.
6'7"?
Yes.
That's in his dossier, I
Yeah.
remember, I think.
6'7". Holy. I'm like 6'1" and a bit. And this guy is like 6'7". He's massive. But he towers over Eileen. And she looks great. Here we are in this
And she looks
beautiful.
But she looks unfazed.
Yeah, she's not fussed. She's cool.
Yeah, she's not, and which I think is actually part of what makes him feel impotent in that moment, is that he has no effect over this woman, you know?
Yeah, she just looks at him. She's cool as hell. She's got her goggles. I love this rushing.
We got to regroup. It's like a weirdly beautiful room, too.
Yes,
I
all
love that neon light above his head.
it's like it's the same stuff you now see on Instagram reels of how people transform their rooms, but like Francis is doing it back in 86, you know, he's got these like little neons. And I also love how the camera rushes to the door. It's just this weird thing of like the entire energy of the language of the movie changes in these scenes. I love it. Like it's like loneliness and it's urgency in the camera. It's very instinctual camera work here. It's like we have to give him a different language than Will. Will's has been stillness
Yeah.
and focus and interiority, and Francis is a little bit more jolting. And I just love that. And you get him here. He rushes back into the room, and then he's in a bit of a fortress of solitude, if you like. And then he can calm down. He takes his awesome shades off, and is just processing here, like thinking. Did I screw that up? Was that an interaction? It's
He
so
looks
fun.
so lost.
Yeah,
It's,
it's.
I feel. I, you know, I mean, man makes you feel like you're suddenly seeing, you're feeling his perspective, is
Yes.
how man is doing these subtle things with the camera that make you feel suddenly, I don't know, I feel so much sympathy for him. Like, I know he's up to no good, but I don't know, he's kind of, he breaks my heart, really.
He is a heartbreaking character in that respect, and I think that that's Michael Mann's literally greatest asset, is that when he has a character on screen, he never makes them one-dimensional. There is always many things going on that you can read into, and even the most awful of guys, who have already seen him when he's in Red Dragon mode, Tooth Fairy mode, but seeing this side of Francis, which translates not only to this scene but to the next scene, that's where it's just like it's actually crazy how good and affecting you feel, like affected you are by him. And you can look at him and go, he's one of those people that has an interaction and then is haunted by it. Like, could I have done that better? Like, is it awkward? Does this person think something's wrong with me? Like, he's someone who's always on the back foot, and I'm so impressed by him. And as we said before, as we've stopped this at 1 hour, 12 minutes, 44 seconds, his shirt's amazing. What a great shirt.
Yeah.
And this is what you said, Priscilla, at this moment. He's in his lab. And he's just taking a look at his next victim, that iconic shot.
Yeah, it took me I think maybe a few viewings to realize like this was not a prior victim, but a future victim. This is Mrs.
Yes.
Sherman in the book,
Yes.
I think.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But
We don't
yeah,
get as much information about her in the film, unless you watch the director's cut, in which you do actually see her living and breathing, in what, like the sort of penultimate scene, if you like, of the movie, in the director's cut, which is that Will Graham visits their house. So it'd be like, you're alive.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I wasn't sure. I don't know what cut I watched because it was the one on the Criterion Channel,
That's
but
okay. I think the
I
Criterion
think
Channel one
it's
is still the theatrical. I'm not sure, but we're
okay.
okay.
Well,
This scene is
whatever.
basically unchanged in
Yeah.
the cut because it's so fantastic. But later on, it has ramifications for where it is. But we're here together. But yeah, he's having a look at her on this light on the light desk. It's a dark shot. But
I
he's
think
just.
like he's getting a twofer with Mrs. Sherman is how I was thinking about this because I feel like the appeal of this photo, and maybe I've been Will Grahaming too hard, but I feel like he's getting a sexual rush because she's beautiful, but I think he's also getting almost like a maternal, the way she's holding her baby? Because I feel like in the book, it's just the description is just that her kids are like in inner tubes.
Yes.
Here she's like clearly, I mean, I don't know. I think you get this from the movie without them ever saying anything, but Dollar Hyde has such a tragic backstory, very loveless childhood, and abusive. And I think that's like the appeal of this photo is twofold for him. You know, it's sexual and maternal love that
Yes.
he's like kind of pulling from it. And acceptance, I think, is also big for him.
Yes, and because I feel like it would be remiss of me not to find an opportunity to have some levity in this moment. Francis and I both have the same type, hot mums, you know? Just hot mums. It's just something about hot mums. There's actually a third wrinkle on that. So it's just like hot mums can be a type.
Oh, yeah.
And Mrs. Sherman here, she's a hot mum. She's definitely hot. Hot
Yeah, sorry, not to make this like overcomplicated and Freudian, but
as.
yeah, she's hot. Like,
It's just
that's
hot as.
clear.
No, let's get weird and complicated and Freudian, but also just like if you have a type, you know, speaking as the husband of a hot mom, I'm like that's a type. That's a type for this guy and Francis, which is the worst. Again, you're a big boy. Oh, look at this hot mom. Anyway, let's keep moving on. Love these shades, by the
I love that
way.
he puts the shades on when he's feeling better. Like, I'm cool now. I'm cool
Yep.
again.
Breathes in, puts his hands on his temples. His posture straightens. He's
Yeah,
breathing.
it's such
Oh.
a it's a transformation.
Yes,
He's suddenly feeling powerful again.
it's a recharge. He's like you said, I love that word. He says like he's getting a little dose. He's getting his something. He's like, okay, breathe. It's like our friend Rob Belushi with Nicorette. You know, it's just he has the Nicorette. All right, and we go from this
Oh.
beautiful neon lit, and we're now 1 hour, 13 minutes, 14 seconds. It does this little hard cut, and we're in this dark space. And it's a bit disorientating because everything here we've had like cold outside, warm inside, another neon lit, bluish space, rushed. And then we get to this stillness of the dark, and it's just a magnificent little moment.
It's the greenish, like,
Yes.
I think I was listening to an interview with Dante Spinotti where he talks about how green is sort of associated with things feeling off. It's
Yes.
associated with Francis and killer mode.
Yes.
So I love that when he enters, it's just a fully green, dark space. And then the lights come on and he realizes Reba is blind. And then there's just the green vacates the movie for a little while after that.
And for the whole time we've been reinforced up until this point and getting in these green rooms or Francis in killer mode, Will's always wearing green. Will's got green ties. Will's got green shirts. It's like him recovering the mindset and getting back to Francis is always like
They're
this.
connected,
They're just
yeah.
connected
They feel
implicitly through
like
the whole
weird
movie.
doppelgangers.
Yes. Lots of man weird doppelgangers in lots of his movies, but that's why we love him. Love this. How does he even fit through that door, Priscilla?
I
It's a
don't
little
know.
turnstile.
Put your back against the door, and there's a stool just to your right. You're the production controller from Admin, right? Can you give me an idea of the conditions?
Oh, I'm shooting from maybe 8 feet. I can't use any lights.
Okay, what's being photographed?
The activities of nocturnal animals.
When do you need it?
It's
I
such a
love
great
that.
line. What are you shooting? 8 feet.
Well, yeah.
The activities of nocturnal animals. And he's got a little whimsical smile. He's looking up and you can see him sort of grinning to himself. He's feeling himself right now. He's being cheeky here. It's really great. It's a really great frame. 1 hour, 13 minutes, 52 seconds. He's looking up off to his right, planning, thinking. There's
They
like a
look.
logic.
It's too dark for me to really tell. Is this a split diopter shot? Because it looks like they're equally in focus.
It actually could be, but she's a little, the focus is a little softer on her here, but it's almost like a fake. It's almost like an implied split diopter, because right in the front, right-hand side of the frame is Reba's sort of billowing blouse, which is so cool. You sort of catch it, but Frances is, it's hard. It's a great trick though, if it is a split diopter, because it's one of the ones so rare that like you actually do. Your brain is doing a rack focus to Francis because of the low light of the scene. You're looking at him and this tiny, you know, very implied light that's above his head is like bathing him in this little greenness.
And he's framed by the metal.
Yes. Yes. These two metal structures in this room. It's so great.
4 days.
Okay. Let me stick this in the black bag.
And on come the lights.
He instinctively covers his face again. And then he's like, oh shit. You see the realization on his face.
Yes.
That she can't see him. And he's so into it. Like it frees him.
Yeah. It's like, what is your one weakness interacting? It's this, you know, it's this moment. But she can't see my face. So I have an advantage to meet her on some kind of level playing field, unlike others, unlike Eileen, Tank Girl. so great. Remember to be very careful. Look at him. Look at he's leaning on his hand. It's very casual. He's covering his face. And then that realization moment, it's really right now. It's a now 14 minutes, 8 seconds. He lifts his hand off. He's resting on his right hand, which is resting on sort of the frame in this next to his stool. And he moves his hand away from his face and he sits up straight and he's looking, he's dead on to her face, like, oh God. And it does have like what you can see the crisp focus here. It may be a bit like split dioptery in the first conceiving of the frame, but she's now turned. So yeah, it's really great.
But still, it's easier to handle than the 1200 series.
Maybe it'll be fine.
In case you're wondering, I keep the sample straight by touch code.
And he would never allow himself to look at a woman like this.
No.
If she could see him.
Yeah. It is a leer. It is like he's looking, like really looking at her. And because he's such an intimidating guy, you would imagine you have to adjust. You can't just like glare at a woman like this, you know? Like it's not polite for starters.
Disconcerting, yeah.
Yeah, it's really disconcerting. It would like make her uncomfortable, but he's just like continuing to talk in his soft-spoken, like very deliberate cadence of speaking, but he's now just sort of taking her in. He's having he's looking at her just like he was in that photograph. He's looking all up and down. And now,
oh, doesn't like that.
Doesn't like the door opens and he stands up straight, bolt upright, straight up. This is not good.
Reba, I got a flyer. Maybe Mr. Donnerhead can drive you home tonight.
No, that's okay. I'll take care of myself.
It's this little guy who comes in this door is so wonderful. I just want to take it back a split second because I want to...
Ralph, right?
Yeah, it's Ralph. another Ralph.
Francis fucking hates this Ralph.
Yeah. And Francis is like stylish and Ralph is like everything... He's like out of Miami Vice. Like he's like a Miami finance bro of the 80s. You know, he comes in, he's got this pastel tie.
It's a nice tie.
It is really nice. I love all
that. And I think he has a Ferrari, or he has a Corvette, I think. Sorry, I keep interrupting because I want to talk about the Corvette.
No, please talk about the Corvette.
That's all I have to say about it. Is that he's so slick.
Yes. And there's this great shot. For 1 hour 14:21. This is a great shot of like how annoyed Francis is with the fact that he's there now. Like he's so annoyed that it's he's there. It's really great. It's a great shot of him just it's pretty magnificent. I love it. And him his smug face. I've got to go. Maybe Mr. Dollarhide can give you a ride.
Fly. Maybe Mr. Dollarhide can drive you home tonight.
No, that's okay. I'll take care of myself.
And we finally get to see Reba, the great Joan Allen. Oh my God. She's beautiful. Yeah. She's beautiful.
I don't know if this is controversial, but she might give my favorite performance in this movie.
I don't think it's a controversy. She's unbelievable in this. And again, we're an hour and 14 minutes into her even turning up.
Yeah.
You know, she's
a late arrival.
A late arrival and big impact. What is it? What's that stupid meme? Like time at the party, impact at the party, you know? Like that's like a where they say like people keep using it for like movie roles in our community, like in memes. They're like time at the party, impact at the party.
I'm out of touch.
I'm out of touch too, but it's a fun one. It was probably 3 years ago, but I'm an adult. Okay. So I saw it on Instagram like a month ago. So there we go. But no, she's amazing in this. She's her performance has everything. And I think in this scene, it's got so much. I just love the way she's dressed. She's got this. I love her necklace. She's got these like little triangular shapes and little circular shapes around this necklace. And it's so textured. And I imagine, again, as a blind character, that she's got textured stuff. She's got beautiful,
yeah,
nice textured things because that's how she can determine that she likes them. It's just a you don't ever know. I think with Michael Mann, my presumption is that he knows this sort of stuff and that's why certain characters wear certain things. But I imagine that that's such a part of her character. Like texture is a huge thing.
Yeah. I feel like he puts a lot of thought into this because I was looking at two different drafts of the screenplay. I've overdone it. But there's, I think there's a scene that doesn't exist in the movie, but it's like she's making drinks and it's very... It's based on touch and she's very competent doing it and very efficient. She's like cutting limes with a knife and like he describes the way she does it and guides her own fingers along the edge of the knife and stuff like that. It's like he's very thorough with this character.
And also making that she's not a prop. She's not a prop.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, the blind character could just be a prop. She's not a prop. She's got a really complicated inner life and she's so rich. I think that's what you say, you know, in the next episode, you'll hear the great Roxana Haddadi and I talking about Reba and Dolahide's time together. And apart from me falling apart because it's really awkward talking with one of your dear female friends about like a totally full-on sexual encounter, it's it's her assertiveness. You think of her, you know, think of these characters when they're kind of like less realized, that they're so like just they're small, they're vulnerable, they're they feel like threatened, but her assertion in this movie, just everything, it's like, no, I'll get my way home, no, I'll do this. It's just like from the second one, she's just great. She's a fascination. And you can understand why Francis is like really taking her in because he's like, she's an interesting cat. And
yeah,
someone that you wish he could have met before he decided that his transformation was inevitable.
I think in the screenplay, Mann describes her as having, I can't remember if it was from the book, but I think it's the screenplay where he says she has a handsome prairie face. And I think that's like such a beautiful description, and somehow it fits. Like, I don't know if I would say Joan Allen always looks like that, but in this role, like, it makes sense in a weird way.
It's like Kelly McGillis in Witness is handsome prairie face too.
But also,
absolute 20 out of 10 smoke show in that movie as well.
Total babe.
No, thanks. Go on.
No, I'll take you.
No, thanks. I'll owe you 1,200 for your 1,000 seat in the morning.
Ride with me.
Thanks, but I'll take the bus. I do it all the time.
Ride with me. It would be because I would like you to.
Okay, sure. Let me get my stuff on.
That's such a nice little exchange. I didn't want to interrupt it for us because she's like, no, I'll get the bus. I do it all the time. This is fine for me. And this is him trying to be ride with me. It would be because I would like you to.
Yeah, ride with me is so powerful. Like,
especially compared to how impotent he was with Eileen. And you could tell he was trying to work himself up to a moment like this,
Yes.
but he couldn't get there. But here he finds it easy to do.
Yeah, it's also harder to bring Tank Girl home and do homework where you're watching your future victim. You know, it's not as easy to do. Ride with me. Like,
Too much evidence at home.
too much evidence at home. Tank Girl has goggles. She could probably see it better. I don't know, but it's.
How did you come to Gateway?
Oh, they had to hire the handicap to shape up their employment practices to get this defense contract.
You worked out well.
Everybody they hired did. You know, you speak very well, although you avoid fricatives and sibilants. At the Riker Institute for the Blind, I trained in therapy for speech and hearing impaired children.
So,
Oof.
talk about competence porn. You don't speak with fricatives or sibilants. It's like, oh my God.
Damn.
Damn, grammar. Us writers, we're just like, no wonder we swoon over Joan Allen as Reaper. It's like, who says fricatives and sibilants? No one's ever said that in a movie until now. And this is like a
Yeah.
serial killer
It's like a
movie.
linguistic, only linguists really say that. I mean,
Yes.
I took a class once, and I've never heard anybody outside of the
I was
class
just going to
say.
say, we probably took the same intro to linguistics class at some kind of college something. And that is literally, and this would be in like 2005, maybe, that I took this class. That's the last time I've heard fricatives and sibilants in a
Yeah, it's
sentence.
like lighting up some part of my brain, some distant memory. Oh, yeah,
Oh,
those words.
the inner
But
articulate mammals that we are is very interesting here. It's so great. And that she studied it. And she can catch it with her ears. That's, I mean, she's good. She's,
yeah, I mean, she might be blind, but she sees him.
yeah.
Like,
Oh,
she
yeah.
just instantly kind of dials in on him and understands, like, I don't know. She sees so much about him that I think he resists at first, and then I think he's kind of strangely thrilled by it. Like, that she sees all these things, but there's pure acceptance.
It's funny that you said that she sees him. It's because like he's almost deceived by the fact that she can't see him. And that line is, I see you. I can even hear in your intonation, I can hear in your pronunciation what you're doing. And so therefore I have an even better vivid image of what you may look like in my mind. But yeah, a really incredible touch, just a couple of lines. And it's like bang, and it's like, whoa, now he's disorientated. Now we are, if you're really paying attention.
You know, people talk shit about Michael Mann, like making so many movies about dudes, but I know that Thomas Harris did some of the work for him, but I don't think that Mann ever underthinks his women. You know what I mean? Like, they
Not
always
once.
feel,
I
even
mean,
if they're only on screen for a few minutes, like they still feel like fully realized human beings.
Isabella, Trudy, Edie, like Laura in Ferrari. I
Oh,
mean,
I feel like the Ferrari in the title is referring to her.
yes, she is. When I mean, look, I love I've been in love with Penelope Cruz for many years, and
Who hasn't?
who I mean, people who are dead, that's all I can say. People
Well,
who don't
yeah.
have a pulse. And her with Michael Mann is just so amazing. They you can tell they're absolutely getting a kick out of hanging out with one another. And I would also say, I don't know if I shared this with you, Priscilla, but I'm sure you caught it. Penelope Cruz's own photography of her very handsome husband, Javier Bardem, for
Oh,
some kind
I
of ma
saw.
Yes. I
My
mean,
goodness.
talk about Ferraris. There's two in their garage at home. Seriously. Holy. Yeah, really great. And yeah, so no, I completely agree. I think sometimes there's a difference between focusing on male characters, or but I think every one of his women are very interesting and complicated and competent that are presented. Yeah, it's a I think it's a dumb reductive argument, like that just people try and slight, but you the deeper the fans get, I was speaking to and people have heard this episode so far, by the time they're hearing us, is I was speaking to a great film programmer and film critic in Australia, Jess Ellicott, and she's, you know, she put it so nicely where she says, I'm always pushing the man agenda, and I feel like I'm a, you know, a lady out there in the wilderness pushing the man agenda. And then I looked at the list of the people who are on this show, and following, all preceding Jess and then following her, some of my favorite critics in the whole world, Lindsay Romaine, Manola Dargis, the great author Megan Abbott, Carly Severn, Veronica Fitzpatrick, Jen, and you, and then Roxanne.
Those
Hadadi,
are all good gets.
And I'm like, all of those ladies are pushing and have been pushing the man agenda. Like, I just feel like I wouldn't be able to speak to you guys if he was a reductive filmmaker like that. It's just, it wouldn't, we wouldn't be having, he wouldn't be interesting to me if that was what he was. But yeah, he is so much more than that. And right from here, he's flexing on that. And it's already happened with, it's already happened in Thief. Like, it's,
I feel like, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Thief's just one of the greatest female characters. That's, you know, that female male interplay. Let's cut out the Mickey Mouse bullshit and get on with this big romance. It's just some of the coolest shit of all time.
Tuesday Weld, like, her character really has her own agency. She's not just like some gangster's girlfriend who's going along with whatever. And
yeah,
you know, I really think, like, even though they're not necessarily the protagonists of the movie, they tend to be the heart of the movie.
Yes.
And Manhunter might be, like, maybe not exhibit A, but one of my exhibits in trying to prove the case that Man is really a romantic, because that is the biggest change that I think he makes from Red Dragon, the text.
Yes.
Is that this movie feels much more like, when Francis takes Reba to see the tiger, in the book it's a lot more, you feel like Francis is doing it, I don't know if it feels entirely selfish, but a lot of it is like, oh, I want her to see a flash of my glory without killing her. But in this, it really feels like a gift, and it feels
a huge
really
gesture.
Romantic.
A huge romantic gesture. It's like, beautiful. How can I give her the coolest thing? How can I blow her away?
And actually, I think it shows us the best of Francis, because it shows us he has the same capacity for empathy and love that Will Graham has, that he thinks of what is Reba's world like, and like, what is a powerful experience I can give her that will affect her. Like, he doesn't take her out for drinks. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
he's
like,
so
let's
pointless.
Go touch a tiger.
Yeah. Not to a restaurant, not to this, to that. It's like, how can I impact this person? And it's like, literally it's an incredibly powerful gesture right off the bat. And it's like, oh, he does have the capacity for intuition and care. And some of that, like, power of him seeing people.
Yeah.
Is scarily applied in the rest of the movie, and is beautifully applied when it comes to Reba. That's the difference.
Yeah. And Man sort of tells on himself, because I think there's an interview where he says, like, he feels like that's the most poignant moment in the movie to him is this moment when he decides to take her to the tiger.
It's great. Let's get to this tiger.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, let's get to it. I'm
going to take us forever.
I'm excited to get
there. You know, if you don't want to talk, that's okay. But I hope you will, because you're very direct, and I like that. And I like what you have to say. Now touch your face. I want to know whether you're smiling or frowning. I guess I want to know whether I should be quiet or not.
She's adorable.
Take my word for it. I'm smiling.
I love she knows that it's strange, but it's like, it feels such a, that line, take my word for it, I'm smiling, is such a good, it's such a great line. It's just such a great line paired with his performance. It's just great.
Yeah, he looks, I mean,
if I could see what he looked like, I don't think I'd
You're not
feel
going
very
with
good
you're
about
not going
going
on
with
the
him. Yeah.
target date. There's no target date.
On the way, can I take you somewhere? It would be my surprise.
Okay, sure.
She's down. She's game. I love her.
And yeah, and in the book, like it takes him a lot longer to take her, I think, than
Yes.
this is just like a split decision, like, oh, this is what we're doing, you know?
Especially because I think it's that the trigger is you don't have to talk to me if you don't want to, but I like what you're saying. And you speak very well and you speak directly and I like that. And it's like, she's not mucking around. And so that's a big thing for him. This, and we're already here.
Ugh.
1 hour, 16 minutes, 22 seconds. We're in it. It's a bit of a hard cut. And it's strange if you've never seen this movie before. Oh my God, there's someone in a hospital again. What the hell is going on? But then within a couple of seconds.
No. The very protective Mr. Dalahad over there is watching us.
No, I want to.
In about 2 hours, we're going to Kathy's tooth.
Cut back to Francis looking at her. God, he's just looking at her. He's so happy. There's actually peace and kindness in his eyes. It's not the guy we just saw burn Freddie Lowndes alive. It's not that guy. It's someone else. We are complicated.
Yeah, Noonan like really differentiates between the vibes, like of Francis versus the Red Dragon, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And this performance is magic. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, see, I have a Francis Dolarhyde moment when I see this. Like gives me chills, you know?
And just the choice of the music change, like it's like this sort of drone and then it's like this little flout, like flautist kind of sound that like comes in. And when you actually see that it is indeed a real tiger, it is magnificent. Oh my gosh.
I feel like Joan Allen is really having this experience too. Like I feel like she's
100%.
Reacting genuinely.
Yes. A completely overwhelming experience because it's something you could just never imagine. Something about tigers. I've done a bit of travel, not necessarily to see tigers, but like been in Africa and seen lions and stuff like that. And when you're just around these lions, leopards, when you're around them, something happens in your body. Like the frequency of your, the frequency of your tactile experience of the world. It's like almost like every hair, every molecule of your body starts to turn on so you can like feel the changes in the air. Cause like there's something primal in like your, whatever it is, your lizard brain, that's a really dangerous thing. Even if you're in a controlled circumstance, you're in a like a giant safari truck or whatever, or you're far away or you're behind a fence or whatever, so they can't touch you. But like her just like caressing this tiger's hair, it's just,
yeah.
And this, it's just, and the fact that the eye blinks and there's no trick here. It's no stupid CGI. It's like literally a tiger
that's
been sedated. It's unbelievable. And these like little errant hairs, whiskers that are kind of going all off in these directions. It's like, this is why a movie like this is so magnificent, because it's like they committed this to screen and we get to cherish it every time that we watch it. It's absolutely.
Yeah, and it feels tactile somehow.
Yes.
Like we're obviously it's a visual medium, but there's something like when I say I have like the Francis Dolarhyde experience, like I feel like I can, there's something, I almost feel like I'm her touching
yes.
the tiger, you know, you could feel what she's feeling.
Look at her just, and it blinks. Oh my gosh.
I don't know why I love this part the most, maybe. When she pulls back the whiskers.
The teeth. Look at that face.
Yeah,
she's,
see when that's real.
That's a real person touching a tiger and having to look over at a mark on the wall to pretend that they're still blind. But like she is overwhelmed
yeah.
and Mam catches that. It's so great. She's feeling his breath.
The breath.
It's warm.
It's warm. Oh my gosh. Francis.
He almost looks drugged himself.
Yes. He's completely, I love that you said drugged because that's exactly the word that I had in my prep notes.
Really?
Intoxicated. He is intoxicated here. And when she's petting this tiger and right now, this is so pure. It's like 1 hour, 17 minutes, 50 seconds. We've kind of like just, we have been intoxicated. In some other parts of the examination of Manhunter, I've kind of paused and gone stopped. But I think sometimes you have to get this dose full when you're unpacking it because it's like it's an intoxicant. And watching him do it and this sweet little vet, like just sort of guiding her. He's so like nice as well, but like you're not looking at him. He's almost like invisible in this scene. In the foreground, 1 hour, 17 minutes, 50 seconds, Reba is snuggling this tiger. And in the background, this big imposing figure of Dolahide is watching her do it, feeling the breath, hearing his heartbeat.
Yeah, in the book, it's described as listening to the tiger heart's bright thunder, which Michael Mann lifts and puts in the screenplay.
Yes, yes.
Which I would also, because it's beautiful.
Beautiful phrase. And here, this is where we see Francis just having
losing
a
it.
Moment. And it's breath. Oh, look at her. That's real. The tears there. That's a real...
Weeping into the fur.
And then him...
Ugh. Francis.
Absolutely. Francis is having a moment. Yeah. Let's watch the whole sequence. He's having a moment.
He's experienced. I mean, it's a sex scene.
It is a sex scene. Yeah. Let's just take it back. I want to watch this is the last, we've gone taking it back to 1 hour, 18 minutes, 5 seconds. Just this last 17 seconds. It's just 20 seconds. It's so beautiful. She's petting the tiger and he is experiencing pleasure.
I think that he talks about this in the movie where he doesn't want people's fear. He wants their awe.
Yes.
And so I think at the beginning of that encounter, he's worried that she's going to be scared, but instead she's awed by the experience. So I think it's like, he's not just having like a sexual moment. It's like he's experiencing acceptance and the kind of awe that he has always hoped for from a woman. And obviously the tiger is this like mediating body that represents him.
And he's always going to chase it and he's never going to get there because that kind of awe is like fully transformational, you know, like it's like,
yeah.
That awe that's in William Blake's painting is the awe that is in that scene because if you could be there touching a tiger, I would imagine myself, I would be wholly overwhelmed. I would be just like Reba. I would be just like crying, trying to cherish and trying to relish the opportunity to like be that close to something so dangerous.
Yeah.
Be connected to it because you can't experience that awe that she's experiencing in this moment. It's like it's a false, like it's awe, but it's like a false thing. It's a contrived thing because the tiger has to be sedated and she's almost like sedating this tiger that is Francis in the movie. Like she's got this balm that can sedate him, but when the if that tiger wakes up, everyone in that room's dead. Like everyone is.
Which is basically what happens in one of the subsequent sequences.
Yes, that the tiger is no longer sedated. And
I did want to bring up when you talk about the painting.
Mm.
This is another thing I think is really interesting because I think there's two paintings with the same name. And I think the one that they talk about in the book is the one where the Red Dragon is standing up and you see him from behind.
Yes.
And he's very ripped. And he's like looking down on the woman. But that's like the vibe of that painting is so different from the one that man chooses.
Yes.
And I almost feel like.
Man chooses the one where, so there's the one that's standing up, which is where you're seeing it from the back, the wings are
Yeah.
spread, the tail. But man chooses the one where he's coming down and the woman slash angel is looking up.
Yeah, and there's no fear on her face in that
No.
painting. There's almost like it feels balanced, and it feels a lot more about like the duality of light and dark, whereas the other one is actually a sort of a terrifying, I think Mann actually describes that painting in his screenplay, which is why I think it's interesting that they made the switch. So I don't know if that was like a production designer's choice or what, but
I just think that so much of the movie starts to come out in that second painting. And the woman clothed in the sun is the like so like straight from Mrs. Leeds, right here with Reba, you know, this woman clothed in the sunrise. It just starts to be like the reinforcing message of like this, I'm going to consume you, but he wants the awe and almost like the willingness and the sacrifice to be consumed. Like that's the weird quandary that he gives himself. He doesn't want fear. He wants awe. And that awe means I want this in some way, some weird way.
Well, that's why I kind of feel like this scene feels more like, 'cause I in the screenplay it follows that scene where you cut to that painting in his house, which might be how it is in the movie.
It doesn't
No,
ever
it's that
cut.
goes to
Yeah.
it goes to Graham, right?
Goes to
And then it
Graham.
goes
Yeah, goes, yes, yeah.
but I feel like in this scene it feels a lot more 'cause he describes the other painting as being it's very ma a man description, or it's like a pre-psychological evocation of like violent sexual impulse or something. But instead he chooses the one that feels more consensual, I would say, and
Yes.
more like reciprocal, which I think is actually kind of lovely, for Reba to be represented that way.
Yes. And that she's in awe is what he's been looking for. And that he's chasing, like, pardon the pun, but he's literally chasing the drag. He's been chasing what he's just experienced with Reba in
His
these
entire
scenarios.
life. Yeah.
In these scenarios and his entire life. And then he's orchestrated this event or whatever to get to this point. But it's like he's been chasing this the whole time. And he's like, now there's this kind of like weird and almost like devastating, crushing reality that, like, oh, I could have had this in not the other way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what's so heartbreaking to me
Yes.
about this is that he comes so close and he meets this person who opens up this capacity in him, and he just can't help himself in the
No.
end. It's like he's too broken, I think.
Yeah. And we get to that point that he's past the point of no return. And I think that that's such a clever edit, which we're going to talk about in the next episode, with our next great guest, is the cut back to Will is the reality that you are reduced to a like a storage unit, a life and warmth is just reduced to that. And that's what Francis is doing. And it's that balance that man can strike with like the Vincent and Neil of it, you know, where it like this guy we can empathize with his loneliness, his longing, his want for love, his, you know, his strange orchestrated family. But he's a stone cold killer. Like it's like that's just he's a murderer. And but Michael Mann is just like he's a person. He's a
Yeah.
person first and foremost. He's a human being.
I feel like Dolarhyde and Neil McCauley both feel more alive than the men who are hunting them, like more emotionally
And
alive, even
sometimes,
though.
absolutely, because the da the men who are chasing them are taking, who are absorbing a toll. I sort of joke that like there's a toll with everything, right? Like whether you are a committed rider, whether you're a, you know, whether your job is, you know, a nurse or something like that, or you care for people in any capacity or whatever the case may be, is like there is a toll. Like you pay a toll to do that job. There's a human cost. And I think that yeah, when you're when you torture yourself to get into these mindsets, these guys are just in their natural state. That's who they are. But when you're not like them, you have to be like them. And there's a toll for acting like that, to trying to maintain yeah. reality. But no, this is such a magnificent scene, and it's been such an absolute ball talking to you about it. It's truly special.
I can't believe nobody else had picked it when I picked it, because for some that's the tiger scene especially just really feels like the heart of the film. Like,
well, you might have thought you were late. You might have thought you were late, but you got in early. There has been many people going, "Can I do the tiger scene?" And I'm like, I kind of have. I think I knew Priscilla would be ready to talk about it. Unlike many people, it's like it's like Priscilla and people like our great friend Jen Johans or Travis Woods, or some of these folks, Jed Ayers. Like, when I ask these great friends and creatives to be a part of my shows, like, I can almost guarantee that their level of homework is Will Graham-esque. It's just insane. They've like walked around an apartment. The lighting's been different. They've read everything. As we've discussed in this conversation. So I knew you'd be ready. So yeah, many people have asked since, and I'm like, no, I think we're good. I think Priscilla's going
to
have
this. I'm sorry to them. but I feel like some people had picked other stuff. I think Jen might have already made her selection. So I was
Jen was very.
She made a good one.
Jen was a great one. Yeah. She was very interested in getting in the cereal aisle. Who isn't? So yeah, there's some really good ones. But no, I've had a ball. Michael Mann makes good movies. Thank you so much. This has been a treat. I love this movie. I've loved it more and more doing this show than I probably even realized. And it's truly magnificent. And I've just learned so much about the art of adaptation with this film in particular. And I just want to thank you so much for all your dedication and homework to get to this beautiful scene and experiencing it together, watching Francis give this amazing gift.
Lose his mind.
And Joan Allen just crush this performance. Oh, what an amazing,
incredible
moment. Just the best.
Yeah. Well, I am honored. I thank you for having me.
All right. Well, you take care. Guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you on another episode of Mindhunter soon. Latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Kahn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year, but if you are a patron, for as little as $1 a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Mindhunter episode, Mindhunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there, so you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods, or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday.
But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.